Thanks, Paul. Great to see everyone. Thanks to the slight shock of we're starting a new series. I suddenly thought I brought the wrong talk there. Anyway, listen, we're looking at John 21 today. And I guess often we have a sort of image in our head of what a person of faith looks like. You know, we perhaps have a sort of romantic painting in our mind of some great saint of the past gazing off into distance with a sort of visionary glint in their eyes, sort of being lifted above the turmoil of the world. And we sort of have this vision of what we want faith to be. And yet I think often the reality of our experience of faith can be much more mundane. You know, you talk to a Christian about their Christian life, and very quickly they'll talk to you about their activities, you know, the meetings they go to, the rotas they're on at church and stuff like that. And you kind of think, where's the vision? Where's their gazing into the distance? I think it's the same for people outside the church. And you talk to people who don't go to church about what they think church is about. They'll talk about church as an institution. They'll talk about it as a community group and maybe as a building. But they don't really engage with that sort of depth of faith. And so there's a bit of uncertainty around, you know, what do we mean here? And in one sense, it's no surprise, right? Because the way that Christians talk about their faith is often kind of boring, right? And we talk to people outside the church about activities, and they think, well, I've got enough on my plate as it is at the moment. I don't need more commitments. So here's this disconnect. We want a visionary faith that looks into the future, and yet at the same time, often the way that we speak about faith can be a little bit dull. So what we find in John chapter 21 is Jesus' vision for the church. And it's not boring. It's full of purpose and full of energy. He's about to send his disciples out into the world, and this is his final instructions to them that we've been looking at the last 2 weeks. And what he says to them is not, listen, I need you to go on the coffee rota. What he says is, you're to follow me. The Christian life is centered on a devotion to Jesus that comes from the heart. So the two repeated phrases in John chapter 21 are Jesus' question to Peter, do you love me? And then his call, follow me. And the two go together. It's kind of what we were thinking about last week. We can't follow Jesus unless we love him from the heart. So last week we saw that we must love Jesus before we serve him. This week we're going to see that to love him from the heart will enable us to keep going when it's really hard. So I hope it'll give us a glimpse of what it really looks like to follow Jesus. So we're going to carry on. We looked at three characteristics of the Christian last week. We're going to have a look at another three this week. And the first is that following Jesus means sacrificing for Jesus. So let's look down at verse 18, just on in the Bibles there. So Peter, Jesus says to Peter, truly, truly, I say to you, when you were young, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted. But when you're old, you'll stretch out your hands and another will dress you and carry you where you do not want to go. This he said to show by what kind of death Peter would glorify God. And after saying this, he told him, follow me. So Peter is going to die. Following Jesus will mean sacrifice for him. And I guess none of us wants to be thought of as a coward. None of us wants to be a coward. But if you remember the background to this, Peter was a coward, right? He just proved that. Do you remember how when Jesus was on trial for his life back in John chapter 18, thank you. John tells us how Peter denied even knowing Jesus three times. It's kind of an act of cowardice. There's Jesus steadfast, willing to go to the cross. There's Peter warming himself by the fire in the courtyard of the high priest. A young servant girl looking up into his eyes. Are you one of his disciples? A girl Peter hardly knew, who wasn't really that significant in that society. And he found it too hard. His stomach was churning, he was afraid, and so he denied even knowing Jesus. It was too hard. Now, compare that, hey Gath, compare chapter 18 to chapter 21, and what you now see is that Peter is told that he is going to walk the same path of Jesus. He'll be brave enough to suffer. Verse 18, I say to you, When you're young, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted, but when you're old, you'll stretch out your hands and another one will dress you and carry you where you don't want to go. As Peter sits there by the lake looking out across the water, in one sense, he's free. He can go wherever he chooses, like any young person discovering the world. But if he's to follow Jesus, if he's to love Jesus from the heart, then he'll surrender. He'll give up that freedom and he'll be led where he doesn't want to go. Now, it seems that Peter was died for Jesus, probably crucified, literally stretching out his arms, no longer afraid and ashamed, no longer clinging to his freedom, but willing. Do you notice the way John phrases this in verse 18? He doesn't say your hands will be stretched out for you, but you will stretch out your hands. There's a sense in which when Peter suffers for Jesus, he'll do it willingly. Jesus doesn't focus on the injustice of his death, but his willingness. Jesus willingly died for Peter, and Peter will willingly die for Jesus. How? How does Peter go from being a coward to being this brave man who'll die for his faith? Well, the only thing that's changed between chapter 18 and chapter 21 is that Jesus has died on the cross. Before, Peter thought he could stand firm for Jesus in his own strength. He failed. Before he can serve Jesus, Jesus must serve him with an extraordinary love in which Peter will follow. It is worth reflecting on this. Jesus knew full well that Peter would deny him. He predicted it. And yet Jesus went on to die for Peter's sin. Actually, all of us, in one level, deny that we deny God's goodness. And it's shameful, and God knows it. And yet the extraordinary thing is that when Jesus died on the cross, knowing our sin, he willingly took the punishment that we deserve for all our wrongdoing. He did that for us, he did it for Peter. And that means that as Peter meets the risen Jesus, the question Jesus asks him is not, how could you, but do you love me? It's an invitation to restored relationship, to forgiveness, to being commissioned. I don't know how you'd react if someone denied even knowing you, if they denied even knowing you at one of the lowest points of your life. And yet here we see Jesus, Peter has done exactly that to him. He's full of forgiveness and love and compassion. We long to be loved like this, don't we? We long to love others like this. When Jesus calls us to follow him, it's in this love, a love that as we dwell on it, will transform our hearts. I think it's fair to say there's clearly something supernatural going on here. Elsewhere, we read of the promise of the Holy Spirit. If I try and love Jesus in my own strength, I'll fail. It's as I pray to him to change me by his Spirit that I'll be enabled to follow him. And that includes following him through hard times. And Jesus is clear that is what Peter is going to experience. Loving Jesus, following him, means sacrificing for him. And it makes sense, doesn't it? You know, often we sacrifice for people that we love. I think of, my daughter, whenever we go on holiday, she always wants to swim in the sea. You know, I find myself in February and swimming in the sea, and I'm thinking, why am I doing this? And then I look across at these bright eyes saying, Daddy, it's so much fun. It's a trivial example. But we'll see love much more costly ways. I think of a friend of mine who was on a waiting list for some ex-serviceman accommodation in London for years, and then his mother got ill, and he gave up the flat, went back to Wales where she lives. He'll never get back to London, but that was his love for her. Think of Ukraine, people dying for love of country. Love can be costly. We get that sort of intuitively. And that's what Jesus is saying here. Our culture often defines love as that which makes me fulfilled. In reality, love is often that which drives me to sacrifice. And so following Jesus, loving him, will at times mean sacrificing for him. And before we talk about what that looks like, I just want us to be clear. What makes us sacrifice for Jesus is love and not obligation. Love doesn't say, well, after all Jesus has done for me, I guess I really ought to do this. Love says, if he's done that, how much do I want to please him? You know, I remember when I used to work in finance, I'd come to talks like this, and sometimes my feet would be heavy as I walked down the road. If I was really busy, I'd be like, oh, have I really got the time for this? I ought to go because Jesus died for me. It doesn't really cut it in that moment. But I want to go because it'll please Jesus and I'll draw close to him. That's what love looks like. It longs to please him and honor him. So to follow Jesus is to sacrifice for him. And there's a cost to this. For some Christians, like Peter, it'll be death. For others, it might be more mundane. I mean, there may well be a cost to following Christ in the office, maybe standing up for truth when others around us would prefer that we didn't, maybe standing up and speaking for Jesus when it might not be popular with our colleagues, maybe giving up our dream job because the place where we work doesn't have integrity. But as we do that, we're following a Jesus who gave up all the glory of heaven to come into this world to die for us. In our culture, we're quick to say, nobody's got the right to tell me what to do with my life. But a Christian will say to Jesus, actually, I'm giving you that right. I'll stretch out my hands and go where you lead me. Whether that's a hard place at work or maybe serving in a way we don't particularly want to at church or whatever it is. Or maybe it's the cost of opposition. Do you notice verse 19? Jesus said that he's speaking to show by what kind of death Peter was to glorify God. If I love Jesus, I'll long for his glory, even if that means facing mockery for standing up for him with my colleagues. The more glory I see of Jesus, the more I long for it to be seen, not to repay him, but because I want his name to be honoured. So following Jesus means sacrificing for him, and that requires a right heart, not just right thinking. But if it's costly to follow Jesus, it can be a different cost for different people. I'm conscious of that. What do we make of that? Well, the second thing we see here is that to follow Jesus means focusing on him. So look with me, please, at verse 20. Peter turned around and saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following them, the one who had reclined at table close to him, and said, "Lord, who is it that's going to betray you?" When Peter saw him, he said to Jesus, "Lord, what about this man?" That's the most natural question in the world, isn't it? So often in life, we're always looking over our shoulder. What about this guy? Think about it. At school, when you've got your marks back for a maths test, what's the first thing you want to know? What did anyone else get? How do I compare? When we used to do the bonus round in the city, and I give people their pay and rations for the year, the question they're all trying to work out is, where did they compare to anyone else? That's why you didn't tell people. And it's the same in the Christian life. We look over our shoulder. Why is it that life seems to be easier for that Christian friend of mine? Why is it always me that has to do this? Why can't God give me a bit of what they've got? It's that question. What about him? Verse 22, Jesus said to him, "If it's my will that he remains until I come again, what is that to you? You follow me." We've just got to focus on Jesus as we follow him. Different Christians have different roles, and we're not to judge each other or be jealous of each other, or wonder why someone seems called to something more glamorous or comfortable. Jesus says, "As for you, you follow me." And so what it seems is going to happen is John is going to go on and write the gospel. 24 answers the question of verse 21. What's he going to do? He'll write the gospel. That'll be important for bringing non-believers to believe. But Jesus' message to Peter, don't worry about that. As for you, you follow me. You know, it's like if you're perhaps at a do after work and you're in the pub and you're talking to someone and they're always looking over your shoulder to see who else is in the room. Well, let's not do that to Jesus. Always looking over our shoulder, that other family at church whose circumstances just seem a little bit easier than ours. Money seems less tight for them. Why can't I be like that? As for you, you follow me. Our life in the office just seems really hard, lots of opposition to us for our faith. Jesus says, don't worry about other people. As for you, you follow me. I mean, now I'm a vicar, I get this all the time. You know, I go to someone else's church and I look around and think, oh, wow, this church hasn't got any cracks in the wall. It's in a great part of town. If I had this church, it'd be easy. And I don't think it's this vicar's. I think all of us, all the time, are looking over our shoulder. But actually, we have a great gospel. We have wonderful provision of God. We have a great community here in Paddington Basin to reach out to with the gospel. Let's focus on Christ. And again, it's a question of the heart, not just right thinking. Imagine a beautiful woman walks into a restaurant. She sits down opposite her husband, and she hasn't seen him all day, and she's just transfixed by him. They're talking, they're sharing, they're laughing. And as she walks in, some sleazy character across the bar sees her walk in, beautiful woman. He's trying to catch her eye. She doesn't look at him. She doesn't care. her eyes are focused on her husband. Well, so we're not to be looking over Jesus' shoulder. And if we are, that is probably a little warning sign of where our heart really is. Am I seeking Jesus' glory? Well, let's be sure where I am, the job that he's given me, the place that he's placed me. Am I trusting Jesus' wisdom? Well, I'll be content with it. Jesus says, if I want him to remain, that's Jesus' plan for him. What is Jesus' plan for me? Am I looking forward to Jesus' return? Well, then I'll hold my circumstances lightly until I return. So focusing on Jesus, it requires a right heart, not just right thinking. But what when our heart is distracted and our love is weak? Well, thirdly, and finally, briefly, following Jesus means delighting in him. And I love this verse that John's Gospel ends with. Verse 25, Jesus did many other things. There were many other things that Jesus did. Were every one of them to be written, I suppose the world itself could not contain the books that would be written. You can sense the joy there, can't you? The delight, the wonder. If you go to an art gallery and you see a great piece of art, a great piece of art is a piece of art where you could just sit there and look at it for hours and lose yourself in it. I think that's the sense here. John's saying, as I look at Jesus, I can just delight in him for hours. He ends his gospel with the spotlight on Jesus, delighting in him. And it's that which will keep our heart right and enable us to follow him aright. So let me ask, if you're here and you're a follower of Jesus, do you spend time wondering at him, delighting in him? I don't just mean, do you come to church and read the Bible? I mean, do you actually contemplate his greatness? If you're looking into the Christian faith, are you asking sort of questions around the edges, or are you asking questions of Jesus, looking at him and deciding whether he is worthy of your worship? Because actually verse 25, it's not just a neat way to end the gospel, it's a promise that if we will but gaze on the beauty of Jesus, we'll find in him treasure that will nourish a love of him that will transform us. It transformed Peter from a coward to bravery. So look, over the last 2 weeks, what we've done as we've looked at John chapter 21 is we've looked at six marks of following Jesus. And I hope for Christians it's been helpful to remind us what we're about. I hope for those looking into the faith it's been helpful to show us what lies at the heart of the Christian faith. And those six marks, depending on Jesus, loving him, feeding on him, sacrificing for him, focusing on him, delighting in him. At the center of it all is Jesus. And our heart